We got plenty to still get into, including the never-ending Christmas in my household. We'll talk about it coming up later this hour. Also, a reminder, an hour from now, we got Greg Swartz of Bleacher Report set to join me. Talk about the Cavs a little bit. What lies ahead for this Cavaliers team with their big matchup against the Thunder on Wednesday and beyond the trade deadline and much, much more. But for now, we stick talking Browns and we go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. He covers the Cleveland Browns and he was there obviously today for Andrew Berry's press conference. He's Chris Easterling covering the team on the beat for the Akron Beacon Journal. Chris, appreciate you jumping on with me tonight, my man. Thank you.
Nothing else to do. You know, it's 6 degrees outside and a foot of snow. Might as well talk to Spencer. How you doing, Spence?
Exactly. So whenever, once the weather gets cold, I know I can always count on you, Chris. I always know. I guess first and foremost, obviously today the big story became the Deshaun setback. But aside from the injury, which we'll get into, what did you think was the most enlightening thing to come out of, I guess, the last 2 days from Barry, Stefanski, and obviously players in the locker room as they were kind of cleaning out their lockers?
I thought maybe it would came from Jack Conklin and Joel Bitonio. Because, look, Kevin and Andrew are going to kind of stick to their talking points.
Right.
And you know, I mean, you've listened to them as long as I have. I mean, but Jack and Joel both saying, look, we were built to run this wide zone, play action pass offense, and we got away from it with Ken Dorsey, trying to, and I thought Jack was even more blunt. He basically said, trying to build around one player instead of around the identity of an entire team. And, I think it's evident that, at least in the offensive line room, which was the other group that, there's going to be a change at the front of it, with Andy Dickerson getting fired. There's a belief that what they did this past season, at least on offense, or we're trying to do, was foolish, but wasn't the right answer. And the right answer was right in front of them. It was run the Stefanski offense, run that, what is basically the Mike Shanahan, Gary Kubiak, offense. That's what this team has been most successful. When this team has been most successful, that's what it's run. And, we got away from it and 3-14. I mean, there's other reasons why they're 3-14, just more than just getting away from an offensive scheme. But I think that was the thing I found most interesting, because, Andrew's going to say what he says, after a 3-14 season, because I think he understands and Kevin understands that this is their mulligan. You don't get to go 3-14 next year.
Right.
Next year has to be, they've been put on notice by everybody from Jimmy and D right down to, as I wrote, whenever they played the game, I think it was Saturday night.
They all blend together at this point.
The best defensive player in franchise history said, we're not doing this again, so get it right. So, they have to get it right. They're on notice this offseason to get this right. And, obviously kind of probably leads to where the next question probably is, which is about a certain position group that this franchise quite frankly hasn't gotten right since 1999.
Yeah, I think we'll sort of touch on that here next, because like you talk about getting the offense in particular right, and that was the points kind of made by Jack Conklin and Joe Bitonio. Just they got away from their identity. They didn't really have an identity, and what they do well wasn't what the offense was trying to accomplish this year. Is fixing that and getting back to that as simple as identifying the right quarterback to do that, or are there other massive things kind of missing at this point because they tried to sort of pivot here that they're going to have to address to get this offense back to playing at that high level?
Well, obviously getting the quarterback right is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Forget about what system is. They just need you're not going to win. Joe Burrow is sitting at home. And, I mean, that tells you about the AFC that you're playing in. Now, we can argue whether a Bo Nix is really sustainable for Denver. But you're going to have to go through the Patrick Mahomes, the Lamar Jacksons, the Joe Burrows. You have to get the quarterback position right regardless. But I do think there are other spots that they're going to have to figure out. This offensive line, the two names I mentioned are two guys who are getting up there in years. We all wonder how many more years is Joe. I mean, it was a weekly conversation with Joel every in December and into January. I mean, is this it for you? I don't think it is, but that's a topic for another day.
Yeah,
and Jack Conklin, finally got healthy, and I thought he was arguably their best offensive lineman second half of the season.
Mm.
I thought he really played well, but you need to figure that left tackle spot out. Quite frankly, you need to figure the running back spot out, because I don't know to play the position, to play the offense, that the style of offense they want. I mean, they were successful when they had a healthy Nick Chubb. And again, listening to Andrew Berry today, I'm not certain you're going to have Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
I mean, the door is left open that, if they can't work something out that I think is amenable to both sides, Nick Chubb's going to be out the door, going someplace else. So they're going to have to figure the running back spot out, and you're going to need other receivers. You're going to need Cedric Tillman to stay healthy. You're going to need to draft or sign somebody to complement Jerry Jeudy. You can't just have Jerry Jeudy, because you saw teams at the end of the year, they're going to double Jerry, because if this is all they have to worry about, you're going to need David Njoku to get healthy and, quite frankly, lose a bit of weight, it looks like. Get in shape, better shape, because it did look like he had lost stuff this year. There's just a lot of things. I think it's not – the quarterback's the most important thing, and absolutely the overarching thing they have to get right. But there is a lot of things within this roster, especially on the offensive side, that has to be fixed for this to really be a team that you can look at and realistically say, yeah, you're going to go toe to toe with the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Bengals, and the Texans, assuming that this was a blip for Stroud. There's just too much talent. Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll go on and on. I mean, but you need the quarterback right. But there's a lot more under the hood that they got to get fixed also.
At C. Easterling ABJ on Twitter, Chris Easterling covers the Browns for the Akron Beacon Journal. Well, along the lines of the quarterback position that they obviously had to figure out, we did get the news, obviously, about Deshaun Watson's setback. From your perspective, and I know we're sort of prognosticating, looking pretty far ahead here, but do you think this kind of signals that he won't play another snap for this team? Or do you think there's still a world where he ends up playing next season and returns and actually ends up back in the field somehow?
I don't think he brings up he's had a setback the way he brought it up. Unless this is a substantive, this is a setback.
Yeah.
A real setback that, or something that close enough to a setback that means that he won't be part of the future, which I think is a lot of people's, expectations anyways, but, because, I mean... You still have a long time till. I mean, what is the setback? I mean,
right.
If he has to go to surgery again, I mean, that probably, if nothing else, it answers the question about what you do next year. And then you get into insurance and cap insurance, those type of things in terms of how you handle 26. But, my guess is that we've seen the last of Deshaun Watson as a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. And, but that still doesn't answer the question of the quarterback position for the Cleveland Browns, nor does it, you know, alleviate you of the massive albatross of a contract that you're still on the hook for 90, you know, whatever the total remains, you know, in terms of actual dollars.
So as the offense tries to kind of correct itself, and the quarterback could be a big part of this, we can get into a little bit here, like what they should do, where they should go, and I'll ask you about the number two overall pick here in a second as well. But we sort of talked, I know earlier today in Berea, about the possibility of them reuniting with Alex Van Pelt. Is that something that you think is a viable option for them as an offensive coordinator? Because that's going to be the first like real question they obviously answered this offseason. And if not, what names should Browns fans kind of be aware of for that to fill that role?
I mean, I don't know why not. I mean, you did go to the playoffs twice with him as your offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I don't know why you – I mean, I don't know why – I mean, I guess pride goes before the fall, but I think anybody who would look at it and say, didn't you just let go of this guy and bring him back? I would appreciate, you know, it would be a sign that, look, we messed up, our bad, mea culpa, we brought him back, I mean, because of the circumstances, we brought him back, we're able to bring him back, let's fix this and get it right. I wouldn't have a problem with AVP coming back, you know, another guy. I mean, again, you sort of follow the connected dots, you know, Clint Kubiak, who was down in New Orleans, now is, you know, they fired that staff, obviously, now that the season's over. Josh McCown, who's the quarterback's coach in Minnesota right now. I mean, played in Cleveland. Obviously, there's a lot of connections between Kevin and Minnesota. And, you know, I mean, we saw the Vikings in town in August for joint practices. So, I think you start there maybe internally. I mean, do they look at a Chad O'Shea? Do they look at a Tommy Rees? I mean, I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I think I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't a surprise candidate to sort of emerge during the search. I wouldn't be surprised to see that, you know, that happen. So, you know, we'll see, but you know, you start with, you know, sort of the obvious names, and then you kind of go from there. You know, a Thad Lewis, who's down in Tampa Bay. Excuse me, another one. But, you know, I think they'll go back to that system. But at the same time, I think firing Dorsey is the sign that they want to go back to that system.
Yeah.
Even if they're not going to come out and say it.
I agree. Chris Easton, the Akron Beacon Journal, joining us here. Just a few more minutes with him here on 92 to the Fan. So I'm going to get you on the record here for this. It's only January 6th, so a lot can change between now and the actual draft. But sitting here today, what do you think the Browns will do with the number two overall pick? Is quarterback something you think is at the forefront of their minds there, knowing how important that position is and that they got to get it right? Or do you think trading back is an option or just a different position entirely?
I think you have to enter into it with the assumption that they are looking at quarterback first. Because you know that quarterback is one of your biggest, you know, roster questions and question marks, and you have to find the answer there. So I think you start there. But my question is, look, we're going to go round and round and round over the next month about this quarterback class, specifically Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, you know. Somebody has a flavor of the month they like, you know, who may join that group, whatever. But if they don't like the, I mean, if there's just nothing, nobody there that they like as far as a quarterback, you know, do they trade back a little bit? Say maybe we can get a little better value for, you know, sliding back however many. I mean, these guys, you know, they like to trade backwards. So, I mean, maybe they do that. If I had to go, I'd go quarterback one, trade back two, pick another position. Tackle would be the obvious choice. You know, there's a couple in this draft that, you know, your mileage may vary on what you think of them, but there's Banks at Texas, Campbell at LSU, although Campbell sort of looks like a guard. I've read, you know, watching him, I read some say, you know, is he not a guard at the next level? We'll see. Again, it's only early January, and the draft's at the end of April, and you're gonna be seeing these guys in your sleep by the time you get to the end of March.
He's Chris Easterling, covers the Cleveland Browns for the Akron Beacon Journal. You can check out his work over at beaconjournal.com. We've got a bunch of stuff up from Andrew Berry's press conference today on different topics. Chris, you know I always appreciate the time. I will let you go get warm, and I know we'll do this again throughout the offseason, my man. Thank you. I'll tell you about the never-ending Christmas in my household coming up, but I thought Chris Easterling had some good stuff to say just about the Berry press conference, the offseason that the Browns have, and he at the end there, squeezed in what he thinks the Browns are prioritizing at number two overall. And as things stand right now, we're not going to hold him to it because it is January 6th. A lot can change. But he suggests that, or he believes that the Browns are going to prioritize quarterback first and kind of go from there. We'll see if that comes to fruition. I know there's a lot of people who agree. JP is maybe the loudest, most vocal on the subject of the Browns drafted a quarterback at number two. But it's weird. And I will talk about this a little bit later because I wondered if there was a clip from this Stefanski, from Berry's press conference that actually he was making a reference to another team, but I kind of wondered if he was making this reference to kind of give us a hint as to like where their heads are at. So I'll play that for you coming up later in the show, probably the 10 o'clock hour at some point. But I say, like, for me, I am just subscribed to this idea that they're going to trade back, which is why I asked the question, like I said earlier, I asked earlier today to Berry, just about, like, do you feel like you have to catch up a little bit because you didn't have first-round picks the last couple years? Because I'm trying to get some read on whether or not they believe, like, he believes the best move forward for them is trading back to maximize the number of players they can take and build this roster and supplement it with young talent that they've missed out on the last couple of years. Like that just in a year where the quarterback class is, at least right now, not being praised as a very good one, I don't know that it makes sense to just like take that quarterback and put your job security, your job status on the line for a quarterback that you don't even necessarily think could be it. Maybe they do think Cam Ward could be it. Maybe they do think Shedeur Sanders could be it, although I don't know that I think Shedeur Sanders could run Kevin Stefanski's system. I do. But we have to see. Gun to my head, I would probably tell you right now, I think they probably trade back and try to accumulate more picks, draft more players. They have more than one need, even though quarterback is the most important need. If they can fill some cracks with young talent, left tackle, maybe another wide receiver, maybe another offensive lineman, maybe a running back. Like, if you can fill these other positions, suddenly you start to feel good about, like, oh, Kirk Cousins with all these guys, or for $1.2 million, or Sam Darnold with all these guys. Okay, like, I can do this. We can live with this. The Browns can be good with this. So that's where I lean today. But again, if as I analyze these quarterbacks and we hear more about them and whatever, that obviously could change before the draft in April. Let's go to the phones. Terry, you're up next to the fan. What's up, Terry?
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, this is the thing. I've said this even before we heard about this setback thing. You really didn't have to worry about Deshaun Watson until until next year, or 26. And the reason why I say that is because that injury is not going to be, even though you recover from that injury, you're not going to be ready to play football. And 10 months from now is in the middle of football season. So, I mean, let's use the scenario. Let's say the Browns are 4-4. I'm not saying they are, but let's say they're 4-4. Are you actually going to bring in another quarterback at that point?
Probably not. Unless it's like a Russell Wilson scenario where you're like, oh, we really got to make a change here because we think the offense just isn't meeting its full potential. But yeah, I mean, I think if you're 4-4, you're probably just sticking with what you got. Probably so.
Exactly. And, you know, unless you absolutely have to do it, like injury or something like that. You know, so the thing is, we just got to bite the bullet. And this is the question that kills me. Everybody now, all of a sudden, they made such a bad decision. It's not all on Andrew Berry that the decision was made. That was Haslam that signed off on that. I mean, you're not gonna let your general manager just say, here, here's $230 million and guaranteed without him having a big hand in it.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well,
it's really, then also there were six or seven other teams. Maybe they weren't going to give him $230, but they were going to give him $200. They were going to give him $210.
Yeah, I mean, the money part of it falls to Haslam, and I appreciate the call, Terry. Ultimately, though, like Andrew Berry is gonna have this on his resume, whether it was, you know, a Jimmy Haslam pushing for it or not. They all continue to preach that it was a collaborative decision. They all had a hand in it. They all, you know, were part of it. And as the GM of the team, it falls on his lap. Like he talked about things that the makeup of this roster and its failures falling on his feet this year. That's the case for the Deshaun thing, which is kind of interesting because, like, we call it the worst trade in NFL history. Somebody called in earlier, I think it was Bill and Parma, and the comment like on the screener said he was going to say that nobody will hire Andrew Berry if he were to get fired. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I did start thinking about, like, if we're calling this the worst trade in NFL history, how does that, like, is that a scarlet letter for the GM trade off, even if there's context to it of, well, Jimmy Haslam really wanted him, and Jimmy Haslam is the one who upped the money to $230 million. Like, if those things come into play, I do wonder about, like, what that means for Andrew Berry as a GM in this league and the respect he has or doesn't have after this. But yeah, I did think about that a little bit. Let's go one more here before we got to step aside here momentarily. Terrence, what's up, man?
Hey, Spence, love the show, man.
Appreciate you. What's up?
Listen, so what I've heard no one mention the whole time, I mean, for the last year or so, remember how Berry drafted DeJuan Jones? He played what at Ohio State? Left tackle. Made him a right tackle. Then they drafted the other kid, put him at left tackle, where his natural position was right tackle in college. And I've always thought about how Berry and company are always the smartest guys in the room, always overthinking things. And
Terrence, hey, Terrence, real quick, I do want, because I wanted to check this, but I didn't want to correct you until DeJuan did play right tackle in college. He didn't play him playing left tackle. Like the first time he played left tackle was this year when he got moved over there for the Browns.
Okay, my fault. I
no, you're
remember
good.
Him left tackle at Ohio State, even with that, the guy that got a left tackle now, the guy who's suddenly hurt,
Jay Wills.
He played right tackle in college, correct?
Yeah. No. Yes. He did play right. Yes.
So my point was like, it's like Berry's always. It seems like they're always the smartest guys in the room, always overthinking situations. Like when they took the Schwartz kid and kept him around, and you got the little tiny quarterback from USC who we still got DTR, who was just not going. He's just not it, and never got rid of him. And you got to wonder. What is it about these guys that they think they have all the answers when it just takes simple football sense? Hey, he's a small guy. Hey, this guy played left tackle in college. Let's let him play left tackle in the pros. I just don't understand it, and I hope you can explain it to me. And with that, I'm gone. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. Appreciate the call, Terrence. Yeah, listen, when you get to that level, when you're a GM in a football in the NFL, when you're a coach in the NFL, there's always going to be some level of like we know best, because I think you kind of have to have that mentality to even get there in the first place. So I do think they trust their ability to evaluate and build rosters and coach guys and all these different things. Doesn't always work. But yeah, I mean, like Barry's got this draft is probably the most important draft for Andrew Berry of his career. Just plain and simple. Because if he doesn't hit on some guys in this draft and that show promise and can contribute to this team that has some holes to fill, a number of holes to fill, then his job's in the line. This 2025 is his ass. It's Kevin Stefanski's ass. Like they got to get this thing going. They got to get probably back to the playoffs to sort of quiet the calm down the masses with their torches and pitchforks here and get this thing righted in order to have a future or a job here in Cleveland beyond just this season. So yeah, there's a lot at stake for this team. There is. And there's a lot at stake for Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, and they'll have to work through those things this offseason. But major, major decisions coming, and I understand where there's not a lot of trust there for Berry, and if people sort of doubt him when he's had some misses, he can't have the misses this year, which is another reason why I think trading back is going to make some sense, because when you take more bites at the apple, you're bound to hit on more players in the end, especially if they're your top-tier picks, your first-rounders, your second-rounders, etc. Coming up next, the never-ending Christmas in my household, plus Greg Swartz, Bleacher Report, joins us at 9 o'clock to talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers. You are listening to The Night Show here on 92.3 The Fan. It's Spencer German with you till 11 o'clock. I want to open up our social media reactions brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. William McEwen on Twitter says, at number two, it's Travis Hunter, no matter what. We're already in no matter what mode, like from the movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner, where he writes on the post-it note to start the day, Vontae Mack, no matter what. Well, you got William McEwen already putting on Twitter, Travis Hunter, no matter what. That's who he wants. I understand the intrigue with Travis Hunter. I'm guessing he's going to be more of a defensive back in the NFL, which we know Andrew Berry loves drafting defensive back, so fine. I don't know, though, if you're using your first-round pick on him when you got Denzel Ward, who's just coming off like the best season of his career. Just saying. That's my holdup with Travis Hunter. Because, like, yeah, there's taking the best player available, and then there's, like, looking at the Browns' needs and being like, do you really need a corner with your first pick, number two overall? I'm just not sure. If you're not going quarterback, I think there's a lot of possibility there to trade back and put yourself in a position to maybe get a tackle, maybe still get another position of need. Like I said, maybe running back, maybe receiver, maybe another defensive end to pair with Myles Garrett, because you've only ever been able to find these veterans on like one-year deals, and you've never been able to actually identify, like, you know, anybody young to sort of fill those roles. I mean, Isaiah McGuire showed some promise. I don't know if I'm investing a lot of resources and keeping him around as like a staple piece of this defensive line, though. So I don't know. Basically, they got some things to sort out there, and they got a lot of other needs. So I understand the infatuation with Travis Hunter, and it'd be a great story. It'd be a lot of fun to get him here. I just don't know if that should be the pick for the Browns, given some of the other needs that they have on this team. Well, as you are well aware, Christmas is very much over at this point. It's always a sad time of year in my house because, like, my wife loves Christmas. I do really get into the Christmas stuff leading up to it, even though it's stressful as hell, and I felt like I just couldn't breathe there for a whole month. I was swamped every day, getting stuff ready, family stuff going on, working, just everything that comes with it. It's a lot, but in the end, the payoff always is enjoyable. And it was a lot of fun seeing my son like light up on Christmas Day and open gifts and all those things. So I enjoyed it. I'll take it. But my wife already tries to like extend Christmas as long as she can. Like, we're probably keeping our tree up. This will be the week. She started taking down some of the decorations, but the tree, the real tree we get, is probably staying up the rest of this week, and then we'll start taking it down over the weekend. That'll probably be what happens with that. And I'm fine with that. I'm good with it. I enjoy having being able to turn the lights on. It's just kind of like a nice, cool feature in the house, so I'm not mad about it. But my wife, at least, she's always upset when Christmas season ends, but she can at least like accept it and you know, knows that life goes on. Well, my son, who's 2.5, and again, for the first time, really experienced Christmas in a meaningful way, where he understood who Santa Claus was. He understood, like, you know, he was opening gifts that were from Santa, and understood, like, different aspects of the holiday and all that, and so it was fun for him. He doesn't have a sense of, and he, listen, he's smart as hell. He's learning new things every day. He's picking up on all sorts of things, things that I say, things that I do, things my wife says, things that she does. And so he's super, super smart. But the concept of, like, seasons or holidays coming and going or times, he doesn't get all that right now. He's only 2.5, so we'll cut him some slack. But so he's now doing that with Christmas. In his little toddler brain, Christmas doesn't end, have an end to it. It just keeps going. Like, now that he's been introduced to it and he gets it, he just thinks Christmas continues. And so I now have this dilemma. Like, he's going to be so confused when we take the Christmas tree down. He's going to be like, where'd the tree go? And he's going to, his toys are going to go back in that corner of the room. He's going to be so thrown off. But he doesn't get it. So this is my reality every night is he started watching the because we read him the book Polar Express, and then we showed him the movie Polar Express, and he doesn't, like, obviously get it, but he just sees the train. He sees Santa. He gets all excited about it. And so during the holidays, part of his routine became watching Polar Express in bed. Before he went to bed, he'd watch like 15 minutes. We'd cut him off. We'd read him a book, and then he'd go to bed. Well, now he's like all in on these Christmas movies. So before bed, he's still asking for Polar Express. He also is asking to watch The Grinch. He got somehow towards the end of the Christmas season and the end of the year, he got into like The Grinch somehow, and he started watching The Grinch. So now he wants to watch The Grinch he calls it The Train before bed every night. He gets in my, I put him in the car in the morning to take him wherever, when my wife was on break and when it was the holidays, we go to the grocery store or whatever. This morning I put him in the car to take him to daycare, first day back at daycare after my wife was off work. And he gets in, I put him in the seat, get on the road, and the first thing he says as we're pulling out of the garage, "Daddy, I want Christmas songs." And so this kid, like, thinks that Christmas just goes year-round. So I am now expecting that, like, in the middle of May, I'm still going to be having to deal with my son asking me to play Christmas songs, and that Christmas is just never going to stop in our house. I don't want to be the guy that tries to, like, prolong Christmas longer than it needs to, and that, like, is, you know, weird about Christmas in that way. Again, I admire my wife. She tries to play Christmas music at random times throughout the year because it makes her happy, and I usually cut her off and tell her not to. But my dear little son just doesn't get it. He does not understand the concept of, hey, Christmas only lasts for so long, and then you kind of move on. And so for him, it is just Christmas song bliss in his head, and I don't really know how to rip off the Band-Aid. Like, I don't have the heart to tell him, hey, little man, like, unfortunately, we can't play Christmas songs anymore. I mean, it probably is just as simple as I'm making it sound. I probably just have to say, like, hey, Christmas music goes away for the next 10 months. And he's not going to understand that, but whatever. And maybe he'll still ask, but I just can't keep doing it because I'm generally somebody who, again, is okay prolonging the holiday for a little bit longer past Christmas, not just like, I had this conversation with, I think it was Nick, about like taking your tree down like immediately. It was either Nick or Jake, I can't remember. But like how quickly you take down your Christmas tree. And like the day after Christmas is a little too aggressive. Like if your tree's at the curb the day after Christmas, it's a little too aggressive. You should at least leave it up to the new year. And so I'm okay with like making it through the new year, making it through even that first week of January, and then like starting to realize like, okay, we got to clean this thing up. We got to get this thing out of here. So I prolong it as long as I think is appropriate, but it can't go much more beyond that. And so I got to somehow get him to understand that Christmas doesn't go on forever and ever. Because in his mind, Christmas just doesn't stop. Just keeps going. He'll keep talking about Santa. He'll keep asking for Christmas music. He'll keep talking about presents. It'll just be an ongoing thing for all of 2025 if I let it happen. But, I just got to draw the line somewhere. I got to be firm with him, and I got to have – maybe tomorrow's the day. Maybe tomorrow's the day where I have the conversation – and I just tell him, son, Christmas music, it expires. It doesn't go on forever and ever. Radu on Twitter says, let us know when he requests to watch Die Hard as a Christmas movie. I'm guessing that will be a while until he's requesting to watch Die Hard as a Christmas movie. But I will stand by what I've always said. Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. I know that's blasphemy, but it's not a Christmas movie. 216-474-0092. If you want to jump in, we are going to talk Cavs coming up here with Greg Schwartz of Bleacher Report, who has a ton of great insight into this team, where they stand, what we should be excited about moving forward with this group, and just in general, the trade deadline, if they should make a move, if they shouldn't make a move. I'm excited to pick his brain because this Cavaliers team is still tops in the NBA. On Wednesday, they will square off with the best team in the Western Conference. And I want to know what it's going to take for people like Charles Barkley to finally take this team more seriously and for people to believe that they're a title contender. Because it seems like us in Cleveland believe that, but I don't know if everybody else on the outside looking in other basketball cities or even some of the national pundits fully believe that. And I get it. We can't put all our stock in the national pundits. You know, Cleveland's never going to get love from those guys. And I sometimes wonder if we just like care about that or we pretend we care about that. But because there's so many people who are like, I don't care what the national media says. And then you care. So I think we always say we don't care, but then we do care. So I do care that the Cavs are getting more respect. But I'm curious what it's going to take for them to get to a point where they start talking about the Cavs differently than what they have right now, where they just kind of throw their hands up and say, well, until they beat the Celtics, I don't believe it. Which they did beat the Celtics, but just saying. We'll talk about that with Greg Schwartz coming up. If you can't get enough of Ken Carman and Anthony Lima, though, from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., tune in Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10:15 with their emerging podcast scene. Listen live on 92.3 The Fan's extra channel in the Odyssey app at 92.3thefan.com. It's presented by Extend Technologies. You can check out every single archived episode as well. We pause, come back. Greg Schwartz will talk to us next from Bleacher Report. What's it going to take for the Cavs to get some respect? And is it too risky to shake things up and make a move at the deadline? We'll ask him those and more coming up next on 92.3 The Fan.